Hello, welcome to the Romance Me podcast. This is Erica, still.
And I'm still M, and we'd like to say a special hello to our number one and only fan. What is Nautical Blue? Pics, or it does not exist.
Do send the pics. Not to me, obviously. I mean, you could, but I don't know if you have my number, so. Definitely to M.
Yes.
Today we'll be discussing An Easter Demon for Eloise by Chloe Alice Balkin. Bouquet of Basil, Yellow Carnation, and Butterfly Weed, anyone? Florist Eloise would love to give her demonic captors the arrangement of Hatred, Disdain, and Let Me Go. Thank you very much. No thanks. But unfortunately, she'll have to settle for breaking out of her confinement and rescuing herself. Almost immediately, she's found by Killian, a loathsome demon who has come to save her. You see, dear listeners, they've met before, and they didn't like each other before. But now, they have to work together if they want to get out of this hellacious landscape, or else they'll be captured, tortured, and killed by his family. It's heartwarming.
Ah, demons.
There will be spoilers beyond this point. We have content warnings for descriptions of past torture, and a character experiences episodes of trauma, panic, and anxiety.
Well, Erica.
Yes.
I usually say so, and you can't really go buttons after well. Well, buttons.
Well, water.
So, Eloise's life, how's it going for her? She's got the pregnant sister. She's got her business. She knows she has demonic abilities already. Or is demonic abilities the right way to put that? Abilities having to do with demons?
I don't know.
Hey, you've got the crown. You're supposed to know things.
It sounds to me like you're retelling. So go ahead. Summarize the story for us, Em.
I didn't take notes.
Oh, neither did I. So.
Ooh, we're holding on to pants now. Are we pantsing?
Yeah, I've been pantsing it every episode for a while now.
Woohoo!
This book is the second book in a series, apparently, that I wasn't aware of when we picked it out, but here we are. So there's some background information that I'm going to attempt to fill in. Let me get my crown out. Since I have one now.
You are the owner of, I think, quite a fabulous little crown.
It is most magnificent. Really came through for us, guys.
I saw that and I was like, you know what? I actually can see you wearing this.
I need to wear it every time we record now, I think. It's going to be fun.
You do you, girl.
The prior book apparently took place during Christmas time, and the main female character was Clara, Eloise's sister, and Clara happened to fall in love with a gluttony demon named Locke, and things are great for them. Eloise apparently hate-fucked a demon named Killian, a wrath demon, in a shed, and then got locked in the shed. To protect her or something? Like I said, don't know. Didn't read the other book. Sorry, guys. Sorry, folks.
Yeah, it was a little difficult to parse it out. Is this weird to ask at this point, but how do you feel about, like, meet-cutes for characters happening in previous books?
Well, I don't mind them if I'd read the previous book.
True. Okay, fair.
I think it is just kind of unfortunate that we either saw that this was a standalone or thought it was a standalone, because it does feel like there's a lot of backstory. I think the author does try to bring us up to speed. There's a lot of expository elements.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was hard for me to feel settled in the world because of that. But, I mean, it's kind of our own damn fault, I guess. Yeah, so Eloise hate-fucked Killian in book one, and apparently it was really, really good, but she didn't expect to ever see him again. and she keeps telling herself she's fine with it. Her sister, Clara, is now mated to Locke, and they have a special word for that, and I don't remember what it is, but it's fine. Now, it starts with an A, like Aoradori or a something.
I know there were a lot of vowels in it, and I wasn't really sure how to pronounce it, so I just...
We also know that Eloise is a triplet. Her sisters are Clara and Hazel, and they have special powers, except Hazel, who is known as Normal Hazel, as far as I can tell. Clara can see ghosts, and Eloise has a demon sense that lets her not only sense demons, but also, like, control them, possess them almost. And also zap their brains, and also know where they are, or see them for who they are. It sounds like a pretty massive power, honestly.
Yeah, it did.
If one lives in a world with demons, sounds very useful. But as far as they know, the triplets are human. They just have these fun extras. Go them. They co-own a bakery with an attached florist shop, and Eloise is in charge of the florist shop. That is her passion. She loves the flowers.
Oh, I looked up that thing. It's Aeonia.
Oh, Aeonia. Yeah.
That means everlasting.
At the beginning of the book, we learn that Eloise has been working quite a bit in the flower shop because her assistant has just left her to deal with it all alone. It's a week until Easter, and I guess that's a busy time for florists. I wouldn't know. I guess the lilies and such, maybe?
Yeah, Easter lily. Mm-hmm.
It's April 1st. And Eloise's sister Clara has just told her that she is pregnant with demon spawn. Eloise is hoping this is a prank because it is stressing her out, but it's a little too specific to be a prank. And Clara did recently get together with a demon. And this is a happy thing. And Clara needs Eloise to go with her for her appointment to see if the demon spawn has horns. Because if it does have horns, it has to be born in hell. And if it doesn't have horns, then it can be born on Earth, I guess. That's our introduction to Eloise, is her feeling stressed and worried about her sister, yet happy for her sister. She really likes her brother-in-law slash demon brother-in-law. I don't think she feels warm fuzzies for most demons because she... still can't get that Killian out of her mind, even though he's a horrible person and she'd feel bad. The sex was just that good. But she thought demons could control whether or not their partners got pregnant. And the fact that Clara is pregnant is now making her worried for herself briefly. It's just one big stress fest for poor Eloise. After that scene, we meet Killian. He is a literal demon. He is in hell.
Aren't we all?
he's fighting the demon scourge.
Doesn't that kind of feel like life sometimes? You're in hell fighting yourself. I mean.
I guess so, yeah. But these scourge aren't real scourge. They're clone dominions, which is a talent his brother has of cloning minions, which I think are lesser demons. Not entirely sure, but they're climbing out of the River Styx. The River Styx is acid, so super friendly sort of body of water there. But they come up to Killian, notice the effluvium surrounding him, this black, misty, poisonous disease that he has. And instead of moving forward to fight him, they decide they'd rather just go back into the River Styx and get dissolved by acid. That is preferable to the effluvium, aka the flu, aka the disease that Killian has been living with for a long ass time, years and years, and the disease that will supposedly kill him eventually. Maybe it does. We're not sure yet.
Jury's still out.
He got the effluvium from his brother. So he has two brothers. His brothers are both assholes. And he has a father who is dead, who is also an asshole. Killian was tortured for most of his childhood by his father. And it's pretty graphic on the page, even though it's memories and stuff that he's experiencing. It's pretty gross. Not light and fluffy at all.
No.
Yeah, this book has an interesting mix of light and fluffy and then horrific torture. Anyway, back to the horrific torture portion of the story. Killian eventually plotted to kill his father. And it was like an oath level sort of plot, I guess. So it had some sort of weight in hell that this is now a thing he has to actually do. And his brother, Killevers, is a vanity demon and decided to kill the dad, not because he also hated the dad, but because he wanted to fuck his brother over.
No.
Knowing that his brother had to fulfill this oath thing of killing the dad, which then gave Killian the effluvium, which is the punishment for not upholding your end of this oath thing. Worry not, Killevers also gets punished.
Woo.
He now has a Nephil. So I guess if you're an asshole demon and you do something horrible like Killevers did, then a Nephilim falls out of the sky and kind of becomes a parasite, and it makes your eyes all milky and it drives you insane. But for whatever reason, it works out well for Killevers. He's fine with it. He enjoys having a Nephil, I suppose. He was already insane, and the Nephil is enabling him to make his part of hell look beautiful, which he wants because he's a vanity demon. So it's a win-win situation for him.
Yay.
I don't know if there were Nephils in the prior book or if this is special for this book, but I admit to being a little confused about the whole world building at this point.
Yeah, I was confused too, but I'm confused so often that I wasn't sure if it was indicative of anything.
Well, I guess there's also angels.
Yes.
Although there's no actual god or devil or anything, as far as I can tell. So I'm supposing that got explained in the prior book.
Fingers crossed.
Killian's other brother is named Kildire. He's the one who can clone things like minions, for example. And not the yellow minions, which the story makes a point to tell us. I guess it's also important to know that Killian's home part of hell, what do we call that? Home kingdom? Home area? Home boundary? I don't know. The part of hell in which Killian grew up,
home turf,
is protected by this magical border that only demons of his bloodline can pass to enter. And in order to leave, they have to find the 6 parts of a key to magically open up the border so that they can exit. Killian did this after his brother screwed him over. And since then, he's been living with Boss, who is a really ugly demon. Also really scary and has lots of power, I guess. And Boss has kind of saved Killian in a way. You know, took him in under his wing, let him swear fealty to him, and then has protected him. Killian doesn't really let himself think about it in that way. He sees it more as like, well, obviously he wants me around. I'm effective at fighting the scourge because of my effluvium. Because my effluvium will kill everything around me. And me, eventually.
Yeah, he's kind of like a time bomb.
Yeah. But Killian's in a place, like a mindset, where he doesn't really let himself have feelings.
Yeah.
Except he does think a lot about Eloise, who he hate fucked last Christmas. And boy, she was amazing, but he never wants to see her again. Because what good would he be to her, since he's going to die anyway, soon. So when we first meet Killian, he's in a bit of a depressive rut. He gets up, fights the scourge, goes home, eats baked goods that his friend Locke's wife makes for them, aka Clara, and is surrounded by demons who are happy. But Killian is not happy. He's a miserable son of a bitch.
Aw, poor buddy.
Back with Eloise, she gets over her surprise and shock about Clara's pregnancy, goes with her to the appointment, and then takes her shopping for maternity clothes. And while they're there, all of a sudden the lights go out. Eloise's demon sense is tickling, and this is not a happy thing. She's concerned about these demons, and her first impulse is to get Clara out of there, because sister, she must protect her, and sister is pregnant, so doubly important.
Yes.
She mind zaps some of the demons, but they keep appearing, and they're coming very quickly. Eloise tells Clara, we need Locke, Clara's mate slash husband slash whatever, baby daddy.
Aeonia.
She also thinks, or we need Killian, but doesn't say that aloud. She works really hard to get Clara out of the store, and she does succeed, but then she immediately gets knocked out. When she wakes up, she is not in a good place. It's dark. It doesn't make any sense to her. Her demon sense isn't working. Nothing seems to be working. And so she passes back out again. Meanwhile, Clara has gotten to Locke. They're having a whole meeting with other demons, including Killian and the third sister, Hazel. Clara is concerned because Eloise is missing. Killian deduces that the minions that captured Eloise were minions cloned by his brother, Kildare. So he's pretty sure that Eloise is now in his homeland, and therefore he is the one and only person who could rescue her, because he is of the bloodline and can re-enter the homeland. But he has a lot of trauma centered around that, so this is a big thing for him. He's all about it, though. Like, he's prepared to do it. I think he knows at this point already, like, he's known that Eloise is his mate or whatever.
Yeah.
But he hasn't really admitted it to himself or to anyone, or not to her for sure. And he doesn't intend to because of the effluvium. But I think that's why he's so gung-ho immediately about rescuing Eloise. And also, Eloise isn't the one that they wanted to capture. They were trying for Clara, so...
Swing and a miss.
I guess that's lucky for Clara.
Mm-hmm.
Considering she's pregnant and all, too. And she doesn't have the zappy demon sense, which seems like a much more helpful power. Maybe there's a lot more ghostiness that goes on in book one. I don't know.
I mean, it is Christmassy, right?
Oh, yeah. True.
Because Christmas ghosts of past deeds.
So Killian comes up with the plan that Locke, who has the power to make portals to places, will portal him over next to his homeland, and then he will cross the border, rescue Eloise, and then get her out by calling up the effluvium and detonating it all in one go like a bomb, killing himself in the process, but helping everyone else.
Falling on the sword.
He'd do it to save Eloise.
I mean, that's kind of expected in a romance. Am I wrong?
No. We're back with Eloise now. She wakes up. She is bound by her wrists, upright, but her ankles are also bound, and it seemed like she couldn't really stand fully because it would pull on her wrists and hurt her, so it doesn't sound like it's a very comfortable situation. She's really sore. She's really thirsty. She's hungry. the demon that captured her, who we learn is Killdeer, shows up. He's kind of upset that she's the wrong person, but he also doesn't seem too bad, honestly.
I'm upset that I'm the wrong person, too.
He didn't seem, I mean, I guess he is bad, but he didn't seem too bad. She talks him into giving her water. He does. She tells him she needs food. He gets her food. I mean, he doesn't really think of her needs as a human on his own, but he is banned from going to Earth. So I don't think he has much knowledge about humans, really. He is a greed demon. He kind of wants to keep Eloise because he knows his brother, Killian, wants Eloise. So I guess that's a thing. He wants what belongs to others. But Eloise doesn't belong to Killian because she's human and doesn't like him.
And can she belong to herself, or is this not, is that not right?
No, this is a romance. You have to belong to man.
Gotcha.
Or demon man. Isn't that how it works anyway in real life, unfortunately?
There is that assumption. Ah, you have a keeper. You can be trusted.
Oh, you have a man. Okay, I'll leave you alone. It's infuriating. I'm laughing because I'm mad.
I've been there.
Eloise and Killdeer have a whole conversation about why he wanted to kidnap the sister, Clara, and apparently it's because he wanted revenge against Locke. Eloise says, well, you're not getting revenge against Locke because I don't belong to Locke. Clara does. No, she doesn't say it like that. She says, might as well just let me go.
Mm-hmm.
He says, no, I think I'm going to keep you. No one else can come in and save you. So, sucks to be you, Eloise. I am in charge. I want to mess with Killian.
How nice.
Yeah, he's a sweetie. A while later, Eloise starts smelling like these flowers. And she gets to meet Killivers, the other brother, who wants everything to be beautiful because he's vain and wants to be surrounded by beauty. He doesn't like that Eloise is all messed up looking, being kidnapped, knocked out, and then hung by your wrist doesn't do a lot for you, you know. And so he magics her clean, and he's pretty rude, though. He says, quote, you are reasonably attractive. You would never do for me, but you are satisfactory for either of my brothers. What is your name? She says, Eloise, what's yours? He replies, Eloise will not do. It's a pet's name, a cow. Your voice is ugly and you're clearly stupid. You won't do at all.
I think I'm in love. Oh my God.
Oh, he's a sweetheart, isn't he?
He's something.
Eloise is clever and she sees that he's being upset and he's also changing things into flowers and vines and such, and he's happened to change her cage and everything, like her whole situation, into plants, which she could escape from. And so she gets him mad by pretending to be stupid. Then he tries to throw her into the corner, but can't because her chains won't reach. So he changes those into plants, and then he stomps off and he's just angry. But Eloise is conveniently free.
Yay!
So she starts trying to escape, as you do.
As you should.
And she pretty much immediately runs into Killian, who is sneaking in to try to rescue her. And he tells her as much, and she tells him he's a little late. She already did that herself, thank you very much. Yeah, she doesn't like him. She liked the sex they had. But he was kind of, he was mean to her. Like, he was rude to her. He said some pretty awful things to her, I think even during the sex that they had.
Yeah.
Their dynamic is something that I really struggled with in the beginning of the story, because it feels very enemies to lovers, is at least on her part.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have the full story in this book of why she feels that way. And I feel like that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I agree. I'm usually not a fan of the meet cute already happening, even in a series, because sometimes things get lost. Every writer does it differently. It really does depend, because there are some where it's fine and it can be used to build expectation and tension and all that stuff. But if you're not going to give the full story, granted, I will 100% admit to it would have been better to have read the previous book.
But it was not Easter themed.
True. I did not realize it was part of a series, because I don't think I looked that. I mean, it's not hard to find out.
We were just excited that there was an Easter book and it looked funny.
Yes. And because of that, I'd hate to feel like I'm doing a disservice to the author, because this is not their intent. Obviously, they wanted you to go from book one to book two, not jump in at book two.
I think so.
I don't think it's stated, like on Goodreads or anything, that you really should read the first one first. A lot of times in romances, you can read them any which order you like. I mean, sometimes there's mild spoilers, but usually it's not too big a deal. But this one, very much not the case.
And yet we did.
And yet we did. And that's our bad. 100%. And still, I find myself going, if you're going to dislike someone to that degree, and then it's going to be reversed through the course of a story, it would be nice, even if the reader already knows, especially since everything else is like, let's explain this that already happened, blah, blah, blah. You really should have some sort of clarifying statement or emotion or whatever for the reason. Because even if you do read them in order, sometimes it can be a while before you pick up the second book in the series.
Yeah, I think part of the thing too is that this author doesn't just stay in Killian and Eloise's head. We get points of view from other characters as well throughout the book. And I suspect they did that in the prior book as well. So I think they just have maybe a different style.
Yes, agreed.
I do think, though, that if the book is primarily about Eloise and Killian, it's unfortunate that the first time they fuck isn't in this book. I don't know, like, call me crazy.
Crazy.
But there could have been, like, a prologue that could have been prefaced with something like, skip this if you've read book one, that just repeats, like, the scene that Eloise and Killian had together. Potentially.
Yeah. I mean, I can't remember if we've read any that have done this, or if I've just gotten this from other authors that have, that maybe they did, maybe they didn't, but they're grumpy at each other.
Yeah.
So it's left it unresolved. I don't care that they fucked in the other book. I just care that I don't know specifics about the reason for their emotional state regarding each other.
I agree with what you're saying, and I think that's why I do care that they fucked in the other book, because I think a lot of things happened during the fucking that would explain how she feels. It doesn't sound like it was a gratuitous fucking. It sounds like it had important information that I would like to have.
Well, if it was within my ability, I would give that to you.
Anyways, she's angry at him. Apparently, when they had sex in the prior book, he wanted her to zap him with her demon powers, and she wouldn't, and she feels weird about that. She tries to get past him. He interprets it as a hug. He says, "We can hug later. We gotta leave." She says, "I was trying to knock you over and get past you. You and your brothers are assholes." And then Killian replies with, "Whatever, save yourself then," and runs away.
Okay, I will then. Thank you. Bye.
At this point in the story, I really did not like Killian. He was just a depressing, horrible demon person. Like, he was awful.
Fair.
And I get that he's going through it, but we don't know at this point in the story, really, that he's going through it. This is stuff that is revealed later.
Yeah, you gotta be careful with that benefit of the doubt thing. Not everybody's willing to pony up.
Eloise realizes that being with Killian right now is probably better for her than being by herself, so she screams wait and runs after him. And as she's running, Killian's hiding in like these protective shadows that are caused by the effluvium, but he does risk himself to grab her and pull her into the protection of the shadows. They're working on escaping. Killdeer is freaking out because he's really mad that Eloise escaped, and he's really mad that Killian is here, and he's just mad. Killevers, however, apparently this was a plan of his, and he's pleased and is excited to torture Killian some more.
Yay!
That's the impression I get? I don't know. Killevers is... I mean, okay, he is mad because of the Nephil situation. He's not all there, but it's interesting that he has this whole plot when he wasn't even the one who planned to abduct one of the sisters, and it wasn't even the right sister that got abducted. Did he develop this whole plot after meeting Eloise? And the thing is we are in his head for part of the story. We don't know. But I do get the impression that this is a plot of his. He has this whole idea that, yes, let's let them run away and try to escape. They'll go to the village and everything is fucked up in the village, but you can't tell because of my magic making everything beautiful. And they'll never escape and ha ha ha, and it will screw with Killian and be glorious. Why he hates Killian, I don't know. I guess because they're demons? Not sure. It's a real fucked up family dynamic, at least, for sure. But it doesn't seem like all demons are bad. Locke seems like a normal dude. Boss seems fine. Some of the other demons we meet briefly seem okay. But Killian's family sure doesn't seem cool. They don't seem fine. So I guess they're just like other people. It's a case-by-case basis sort of situation, maybe.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Killevers convinces Killdeer to let them try to escape because they're not really going to escape and won't it be fun to torture them. Hee hee hee. I am evil. Killian and Eloise get to the village, but it doesn't look like how Killian remembers it looking from when he had escaped last time. It's deserted. It looks beautiful and almost like a gorgeous earth village. There's little cute bunnies and foxes and deer and beautiful flowers, and it's glorious and beautiful and wonderful. Killian plans for them to just keep running. Eloise says, no, I can't keep running. I'm exhausted. You may be a powerful demon. I am a human. I've just been strung up by my wrists for who knows how long. I'm tired. Killian is kind of peeved about Eloise stopping to rest, but he stops to wait with her. He rationalizes that with, well, we have to find the keys anyway so that we can get out. He's also curious about how all these beautiful, fluffy, cute earth animals came to live in hell and why they seem to be thriving. And he reaches down and pets a bunny and it bites his finger off.
Sassy.
He hides it from Eloise. Let's not show Eloise that my finger is gone. And uses his effluvium, which he has some control over, to expose the bunny's true form, which is a death rat.
Oops.
Killian realizes that this is a result of Killever's Nephilim. He explains it to Eloise, saying that, you know, since Killevers is ruled by vanity, he's using the Nephil to make his wishes a reality, and it's making this whole place appear beautiful. By the way, we can't just leave. We have to find these six keys that we'll put together to make one big key that will magic us a way out. But the key fragments won't look like how they're supposed to look because of the illusion around us. So we don't really know what we're looking for, but we're looking for something, and we need to find six of them.
Okay.
Meanwhile, Eloise notices he's bleeding. He says, oh, it's fine. I got bit, but my finger will grow back. That's a fun thing we know about demons. They can grow limbs back.
Hmm. Handy.
They go inside one of the cottages. It looks really nice inside. It seems safe. Eloise is trying to find something to clean up his finger stump and fix the bleeding and all that. They find a bottle of yellow powder in one of the cabinets that Killian dips his finger stump into, and it forms like a protective seal around it. And apparently that won't interfere with the finger growing back, so that's nice. Eloise asks if they could stay for a little bit longer because she's really tired. She wants to nap. Killian says, okay. Before Eloise lays down, she takes off her shirt because it's got blood on it from Killian's finger bleeding. She wants to wash it out. She is a very neat person, which I guess is something we know from book one, or that Killian knows from book one, and so do we, if we had read it. Her taking the shirt off amps up the sexual tension, which they do both feel. So even though Eloise doesn't really care for him, she's starting to see he's more than just an asshole. He's got other stuff going on. Maybe he's okay. I don't know why she thinks that now, but she does. They kiss. Killian asks her to promise to never go into his mind. She says she won't. She accepts his boundary, but she wants to know why. And he says it's because of torture. There's some making out. Sexy stuff. They're having the sex.
Woohoo.
And it's glorious and wonderful. All of a sudden, Killian opens his eyes and realizes there's little cuts all over Eloise, and she's bleeding everywhere. Eloise hasn't noticed. She's within the throes of orgasm or whatever. Killian, up to this point, has thought he was in his human form, but now takes a close look at himself and realizes he's not in his human form, even though he thought he was. And he's used his demon claws and demon horns to inadvertently hurt Eloise and comes to the conclusion that the house is a trap. And so what does he do? He pulls out and runs away. Eloise is laying in bed going, what the fuck just happened just now?
What the literal fuck?
Yeah. She is trying to figure out why on earth he would leave in the middle of sex like that.
Same girl, same.
She runs out of the house to yell at him, but he is angry at her. And he's like, you know, you dragged me in that house and then you kissed me and got all naked and all this. And then I almost accidentally killed you. And this is horrible.
It's all your fault.
And she's like, what? You were going to kill me? He's like, no, not on purpose.
Could have led with that.
She doesn't believe him. She like turns around and starts walking off. And then she realizes that she's bleeding all over and starts screaming. They're both mad at each other. They're yelling at each other. They're saying horrible things that they really don't mean.
Maybe they mean.
Maybe. But while they're getting mad, her rage is sucking up all the effluvium around him, taking it away from him, which is potentially good for him, I think. He doesn't really think about it too much, aside from that he notices it and he thinks, well, maybe that'll buy him more time and they might need more time so they can find all the keys and he can rescue her. She tries to say, you know, I'm just going to go off on my own. And he says, well, you can't leave without the keys and you're not going to be able to find them without me. And then Eloise says, well, it's probably that stupid egg right there. I'll probably find them faster than you. And Killian goes, what stupid egg? But then he realizes that it is one of the key fragments and it is in the shape of an Easter egg. So they have to go on an egg hunt. Now, this is very much the secular Easter in this story. You know, we get the egg hunt, the peeps, the bunnies. that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
We get a brief scene between the two evil brothers where they're spying on Killian and Eloise, and Kildare is like, come on, let's just finish this. I want Eloise back. And Killevers is like, no, I want to fuck with them some more. This is so fun. Meanwhile, Killian and Eloise find a second egg. This one is in a fountain, but they can't get to it because the water in the fountain is from the River Styx, so it is acidic. And while they're trying to figure it out, there is a bunch of birds, things that look like birds but are actually hell bats or something, flying for them. And so they run, and Killian finds some plywood, and he fits it all together into a little box for him and Eloise to hide into. And it's closed up and dark, and it is safe. It does protect them from the birds slash bats, but Killian has a panic attack while they're in the box because it reminds him of the torture and being so close to Eloise. Eloise smells still like the dungeon, and that also reminds him of the torture. Eloise calls him on it, asks if he's having a panic attack. He swears he's not. Eloise has some empathy for him. She explains that she saw her father die in a car attack.
Herbie?
She saw her father die in a car accident right in front of her, and she blocked that memory for a while, but then started having memories of it, and she understands that you can have trauma. And she says if he wants to ever talk about it, she's there for him. She won't judge him or accuse him of lying or anything like that. This scene enables Eloise to see that Killian is not actually an asshole at all. Probably most of his asshole traits are due to, one, him being a wrath demon, and two, having severe trauma that he's still dealing with. She can understand that, and it enables her to feel understanding. Because she gets it, and it enables her to have some more understanding or acceptance for Killian and see him as a person instead of that jerk. Progress.
Yay.
Finally, the birds stop hitting their protective box, and Killian decides it's safe enough to exit, so he starts opening the box up, but it's difficult because they are surrounded by piles of dead birds. A 20-yard radius of dead doves, apparently. Although they're actually hell bats or something. Killian explains that they're probably because his brother Kildare can clone things. That's how he sent so many. And actually, that's how you got captured, because Locke was supposed to be guarding Clara, and instead he was fighting minion clones with me. So I guess the minion clone scourge was like a whole distraction tactic. They go back to the egg in the fountain. They manage to get it out, and then they keep wandering around. They manage to find a third egg. It's a pretty good day. Eloise is feeling good. She wants to know some more about Killian. She wants to get to know him at this point and be his friend. She figures that he's not into the sex stuff at all, because he literally ran away in the middle of sex last time. She's like, well, at least we could be friends. However, she mentions to him that she wants to be friends with him, and he doesn't like that because you can't just decide to be friends.
I feel like it's a choice, but whatever.
I don't know. I think that's his perspective.
You either have a rapport with someone or you don't. I mean, to a certain extent, you can work on it, but I mean, usually that's a pretty natural process. But you can choose whether or not you stay in touch with someone. You can choose whether or not you continue to engage.
Yes, that's true. But Killian doesn't see it that way.
Of course not.
And he gets angry and he says, you don't want a friend. That's not what you want. And she says, well, I do want to be your friend, even if you're cruel and have this whole woe is me thing going on and you're trying to scare me. I still think you're a good man. I want to prove it to you. And so then he says, you don't want to prove I'm a good man. You want to prove I'm a good lay.
Hasn't that already been proven?
I mean, yeah.
Just checking.
And she says, how about we cut the difference and I prove both? They have sex. And this time he does do some kind of angry, dirty talking, like, quote, is this what you want, you slut, unquote. But she apparently took offense back when this happened on Christmas. But this time she knows more about him and realizes that this is just how he dirty talks because he's a wrath demon. I think maybe instead of that, they could have had a conversation about what type of words they want to use in the bedroom. But that's just me.
I agree.
Just, he's kind of into the humiliation in sex, I guess. Or the degradation or whatever. That seems to be part of his thing.
I mean, she enjoyed it.
She's into it at this point because she understands him better and is okay with it now, I guess. And she reminds herself that, oh, well, he's a wrath demon and he's hurting and I don't need to take his words seriously, only his actions. It's fine. But I still feel like maybe they could have had a conversation about it and that would have been nice.
Agreed.
It's an important sex scene because we do get some realizations on Eloise's part. She understands him better and stuff, but there's a point where it says that she no longer has to guess at what he's trying to say. She knows. So this is the point where a switch has been flipped. She now understands him. She gets him. She's cool with it. And she likes him now.
Yay.
On one hand, I really like that he's a wrath demon. And I'm going to assume that's part of why he's into this stuff. I'm not saying this stuff isn't fine. You can be into this stuff. Just have a consensual sort of experience, right? I think, though, I do appreciate that maybe he doesn't even understand that he's this way.
Yeah.
And so can't necessarily explain it. And she gains this understanding over the course of this story and this particular sexy times and kind of sees him for who he is at this point. And I can appreciate that. But at the same time, I do wish I had more, like not just this before she starts deciding she's falling in love with him, essentially.
Yeah.
I feel like that was a little fast for me, especially because they're so mad. And this sex that they're having starts out as like angry sex because he's avoiding showing his vulnerable underbelly to her.
Yeah.
And then she's like, haha, I see your vulnerable underbelly regardless.
Maybe it's just me, but it's like, I guess another story where she does the labor and the insight and everything, and he's just kind of left in the dark. And she's just like, I'll just accept it. It's fine. We don't need to talk about any of it because it upsets you.
There's that, but he's also like kind of fucked over it too. After they're done, he's thinking, oh, well, she was just afraid of me and letting me do this because of that. And the orgasms and stuff that she had were just her body responding to stimuli, not because she was actually into it. You know, was she actually willing?
Mm-hmm.
So he's really confused and upset and angry with himself. And then she invites him into their little tent that night. And apparently that helps him realize that she does want to be with him in that way. I really think they need to have a conversation.
Agreed.
But they don't.
Nope.
Not about that anyway. She does do the bulk of the emotional labor in this story for sure, because she's learning how to deal with him and his needs and all that without him really having to do anything. Although he does sort of work through, well, he doesn't work through his trauma. He sort of realizes he does have trauma to work through.
Yes.
And becomes more willing to do it because of her. So there is that.
Yay.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
That night in the tent, she tells him that whatever he tells her, she's never going to reveal to anyone. He's safe with her. She wants to be there for him. He tells her his backstory, but he doesn't tell her that she's his fated mate. We also get another scene with Kilever spying on them again. He's quite into watching. He's very fascinated by the fact that Eloise is taking in the effluvium from Killian, and because of that, he thinks she will be dying too, I think? That's also confusing. I'm not sure how he expects Eloise to be dying. There is the whole thing, like, if Killian did tell Eloise that they were mates and he did the bitey thing or whatever it is he needs to do, then if he dies, then she would die. Or if she dies, he would die or something. So there's that. But that's not what this is about in the scene with Kilevers. So I'm not sure. Killian does reveal to Eloise about how he's living on borrowed time. He expects that the effluvium is going to take the last bit of his wrath and then he'll die, and he's willing to hurry that process along if it will save her because he wants her to get out of here alive. And she doesn't quite pick up on what he's saying because she's like, no, of course he wouldn't kill himself to save me. That's crazy. Like, instead, she's thinking she can save him. The next day, they keep searching for eggs. They split up a little bit to hasten the process, and Eloise finds one. She doesn't try to retrieve it herself because Killian has warned her not to. Since he can grow his fingers and hands and stuff back and Eloise can't, he wants to be the one to do the dangerous thing. She goes to find him and sees him attacking a sign and yelling and screaming and having a whole episode where he says he hates this place, he hates his father, he hates his brothers, he hates being tortured, he hates everything. He's just so mad and angry and horrible. He's beating this sign up and just letting it out. And I think that's good for him.
Mm-hmm.
Eloise comes over. She realizes that she loves him and she's happy that he's working through it. And she wants to be with him forever. And she goes to kiss him. And then she wants to help him feel better and clean off his messy, bloody hands that he got from beating up the sign. Killian is like, I can't be with you because I don't know if I could prevent myself from hurting you. And she's like, yeah, no, you won't hurt me.
Oh, that old chestnut.
Meanwhile, come help me get this egg. They find all the eggs, finally. They needed 6 of them, and it turns into a peep, a chick, coated in bright sugar crystals with a gooey white center. Killdeer and Killivers are watching this through the scrying bowl, or whatever they're using to spy. Killdeer is getting really mad because they're so close to escaping and you can't let them escape. Kilever says, well, maybe we need to bring them back then. Killdeer says, well, how? They already have the key and they're going to leave. Kilever says, no, it's going to rain. So luckily, Killian and Eloise see some lightning and that warns them of the rain, and they run and go hide in a cave because the rain is acid and could kill them. So that's not good. Killian tells Eloise that they're not going to be able to keep it raining forever because they also won't survive the rain. The rain will have to stop before they can come attack us. And in between that time, we will have a brief moment where we can try to make a run for it. That flu is going to kill me. I can trigger this bomb at any time. So if it comes to it, you sprint to the gate. And I'll stay back and trigger the flu and blow everything up. Eloise doesn't want him to die, says, no, you can't die. He says, well, I'm going to die anyways, no matter what, and I'd rather do it saving you. And she kisses him and says, no, you can't die today or tomorrow. I'm going to cure you. They have more sex. During the sex, I think, they talk about how the effluvium seems to like Eloise. It kind of curls around her and she soaks it up.
Yes, it's drawn to her.
Yeah, and it goes away from Killian, so presumably she could cure him because she can soak up all the effluvium and then he won't have it anymore. So while they're having sex, Eloise is like, oh, I care about you more than anything, and then asks if he wants her blood, and he says no, and then he starts to ask, I think, if she wants his blood, and then he says, wait, you don't really need it, you can just go in my mind with your demon sense. Eloise says, well, yeah, but you told me never to do that. And he says, well, I'm scared of what you'd see, but you can if you want. He trusts her now and wants her to be close with him in that way, even though he's worried about what she'll see. Eloise says that her demon sense isn't currently working ever since she's been in hell. He doesn't believe that. Well, he believes she believes it, but he doesn't think that it's not working. He thinks it's part of the illusion. He tells her that sometimes he goes with Locke to do security on her shop. He likes looking at her flowers, specifically the bouquet she makes. He tells her that there's a flower that she uses that looks kind of like a rose, but it's not a rose. And he describes it to her, and she says, oh, that's a kind of camellia. And he says, that is what you are. You're like that camellia. You're beautiful like a rose, but you're more than that. It's a very sweet moment, this little speech he makes, and it makes her feel seen and cared about.
Yes, it was very sweet.
After that, the rain stops. They have to get ready to run, but they have to wait for things to dry off a certain point first, too. At this point, he's admitted to himself that she's his Aeonia, fated mate person, but he can't ever let her know because he's gonna have to sacrifice himself for her. If he doesn't bond with her fully, then hopefully him dying won't kill her too. I guess, yeah, because demons, if their fated person dies, then they also die. And he's not sure if it's the same if their fated person is a human, and he doesn't want to chance it.
Makes sense.
Once everything dries off enough, they start hauling ass, start running. They get chased by a bunch of bunnies, and then also by a bunch of baby chicks. And the rocks underneath them turn into jelly beans, and they start slipping around. He says that he needs his effluvium back. There's a wall of chocolate bunnies in front of them. He's all angry. He's like, you took it from me and I need it. And she at first is mad or defensive, and then she realizes he's just panicking. He says, you need to zap me. That'll give me the effluvium back. So when you're running, you keep me in your mind. And when I tell you, you zap me. And that will enable me to use the effluvium the way I need to. And she says, okay, even though she doesn't think she can, he tells her that's just part of the illusion, so she trusts him. They keep running. There's just all sorts of things after them, minions and arrows and everything. Yeah, it's just a lot.
It's chaos.
And she's hauling ass, and she sees the gate in front of them, and she's almost there, and then all of a sudden Killian yells, now! And so she is able to use her demon sense and focus on him, and she zaps him. She's getting ready to get that gate open, and behind the gate she sees somebody, and she's like, oh, I hope that's somebody nice. I don't know. She uses the peep, aka key, to open the gate, and she gets out, and there's Locke. He grabs her, doesn't let her look behind them, forcing her head into his chest, and a powerful blast like a bomb has them falling through a portal of locks into his living room. So Killian used that effluvium all right. Like he said he would.
Man of his word, or demon of his word.
Right. They're back at Locke's house, I think. They're still in hell, but they're not in the part of hell they were trapped in. Eloise's sisters are there and everybody's happy, but Eloise is freaking out because she needs to go back and get Killian. Where is he? He's trapped in his own personal hell. Locke says he went supernova. That's what knocked us back into the portal. He's gone. And then Boss shows up and Eloise says, Dad, you need to bring back Killian. And so we have this whole what the fuck moment where apparently Eloise and Hazel and Clara's dad is actually this possibly demon guy named Boss who apparently faked his death and went to hell. I don't know. Clara is at first, yeah, we're all of a sudden we're in Clara's head. She at first is like, wait a second, that's not true. My dad is human, but I never saw his ghost, so maybe this is my dad. And maybe because Eloise has demon sense, he always looked like this to her. And even though he looked human to us, so this is normal to her, and this is how she knows. And I don't know. And the way that Eloise just takes it in stride, because she thought her dad died. She saw him die in a car accident. And yet he shows up right here. He's a demon guy. And she's just like, Dad, you need to get Killian. Not, Dad, where the fuck have you been for all these years? Or, Dad, I thought you died. Or anything like that. No, it's, Dad, you need to get Killian for me. And I was just, I am so confused.
I am right there in that boat with you. Yeah, I was scratching my head going, wait, what? What?
It's like, okay, so I don't mind that the dad is the demon guy. That's fine. But Eloise just seems just like so like, oh yeah, there's my dad who I thought was dead. Turns out he's a demon. I'm not going to say anything about that at all. I'm just going to ask him to go get my man for me.
Yeah.
And somehow I'm going to know he can do it.
Romance rules. Yeah, that makes sense. Otherwise,
you can't blame romance for this. This is not romance rules. This is just random.
No, it's the dad can fix everything thing.
That's not romance rules.
It seems like it.
I thought romance rules was asshole dad.
Yeah, unless it's asshole dad, and then it's dad can fix everything. It's one side of the coin or the other.
I don't remember dad fixing everything.
It seems like it, because it's that whole, you know, no problem is too big, everything gets resolved all neat and tidy.
But that has nothing to do with the dad.
Well, that's why I was saying romance rules, because it's not the character. It's like,
oh,
a
default. You're just saying because it all gets solved?
Yeah. And she's not doing it. Therefore, there has to be a more powerful thing out there that she can appeal to.
I guess. Why can't she do it?
I didn't write her.
Regardless, we learn that Boss is not actually quite a demon. So apparently he can go into the gated off part of hell that belongs to the Kill family. Boss gets Locke to open a portal. They both portal back to where Killian exploded. And then Boss threatens Locke with horrible torture, like graphic horrible torture, if he ever reveals what is going to happen next. And then sprouts an angel feather and uses it to break the protection around that part of hell, and now anyone can go there again, and retrieves Killian for his daughter Eloise.
Yay! What a good dad.
And Killian is dead. So dead. So very, very dead. He's just lying there on the kitchen table. Eloise is sad. And then Hazel finally can't deal with Eloise being sad anymore, says to her their dad, so apparently she knows and is totally fine about this dad being their dad, and says, you can't stop me, I'm gonna do this anyway. Then we're in Hazel's head, and she uses her power, which is apparently bringing things back to life, to revive Killian. Killian wakes up. He thinks he's in the afterlife, whatever that might be. And he's thinking he's being tortured because he's surrounded by everyone who, you know, he knows and loves and cares about, including Eloise. But then he finally realizes, no, actually, this is real. I accept that this is real. They say they love each other and it's all happy and yay. And then in the next chapter, we're back in Hazel's head. It's Easter Sunday. It's nice out. And Hazel is outside, basically waiting for an angel to show up and come get her. And it turns out to be an angel that she recognizes from book one, I'm assuming?
I assume too.
And apparently he saved her life, maybe, in book one. But we learn that he's taking her to heaven to imprison her. So that's the setup for the next book, I guess.
Yeah, it's a Halloween angel for Hazel.
Oh, okay. And then we end the story with a sweet moment between Killian and Eloise, where we learn she's made him a set of little socks he can put over his horns so that she'll be protected from them, because apparently they're like swords. And that's the end.
Yay!
That was a really jumbled summary, but let me tell you, I think that the story felt kind of jumbled for me.
Yeah, same.
And I think part of it was that it's the second book in the series, but I think part of it is just the writing style, too. The writing style is very chaotic. Lots of action. There were lots of moments where I felt like I could have had more, like more description, more insight, more exposition to help me understand what was going on. And because the story was so action heavy, maybe it would have slowed down the pacing more than the author would have liked or something, but I think it would have improved my enjoyment of the story.
Yeah, for me, there was an awkward balance between transitions of things. And I'm not just talking about like just jumping into random characters' heads, but even the flow within scenes.
Yeah.
Where you have the transition between essentially dialogue and exposition. With where they were, it would break up the flow. So you talked about it being very fast-paced, but at times I felt like it was really slow because of the sort of interrupting nature of the writing.
Oh, yeah. That's what I meant by saying it was chaotic. I think you described it better, that it felt like the story was interrupting itself.
I have this conflict inside of me where it's like, I don't want to be down on the story because truly we didn't read the first book. So there's a lot of things we're going, you know, maybe this was discussed before better. She didn't want to reiterate herself. So now we're sort of left hanging. We did that to ourselves. And that is their voice. They're entitled to their voice. It was just difficult for me to follow. And maybe that's just me.
I think those are two different things. I think one of the things is fair in that, yeah, we didn't read the first book. And so obviously that's our fault, right? Mm-hmm. But the second part about the writing style not gelling for you or feeling chaotic or interrupty or however you want to describe it, I think that, yes, every author is entitled to their own voice, obviously. But at the same time, it's okay to not like it, you know?
I felt kind of like the writing style wasn't my thing. And I don't know if it's necessarily because I was trying to read it quickly, if that was a factor as well. And also, I mean, I was in a position where I was getting interrupted a lot too, so I don't know if that necessarily helped.
I read it under calm circumstances where I was not being interrupted, and I read it in two sittings. I have the same thoughts on the writing style that you do. I'm not saying everyone is going to agree with us, because obviously that's not true. But that doesn't invalidate our opinions of it.
No.
And that's what this is. It's an opinion. It's not anything else.
True.
I haven't published any books, so.
Yes, good on them for getting published multiple times.
Yeah.
Go them.
And I love the idea of the stories each being about a holiday, and
mm-hmm.
I do enjoy the world building that I was able to understand. I thought it was fun. I think that there was just a lot about the writing style that made it hard for me to get into the story. And we can't really comment on the audiobook because there's not one. So we're going to move forward. And I'm going to ask you a question. I've asked you this before.
Okay. I am prepared.
Are you happy for their happy M?
Prepare to hate me. I welcome it. I think I'm truly, I was happy for me that I was done with the book.
Oh my gosh. Ouch.
I was trying so hard to get it finished and everything, and I was very confused. And yeah.
Okay.
It's more like I'm okay that they're happy. But yeah, I was happier for me. What about you? I know it's unkind. I apologize. But it's the truth.
What am I supposed to do with that when I'm editing? My God.
I don't know. I could say something else that you could put in there in its place.
It's the truth, and we like the truth, right?
Yes. That's why I was like, well, it is honest. It is truthful. I'm an asshole, but that's also truthful.
Okay, so I am not sure if I'm happy for them, I guess, because I feel like they definitely wanted to be together by the end of the story, and they were fated to be together, and their relationship seemingly works for them now that Eloise has decided that him being an asshole is because he's a wrath demon, and therefore it's fine. Plus, he has trauma, so he has an excuse for being an asshole. So there's that.
It's fine.
Not that I think he's necessarily much of an asshole, but she thinks he is.
Yes.
I guess so. Sure.
Yay!
Go them. How do you rate Eloise?
I was happy that she saved herself out of the prison, I would like to preface. I think she is a very compassionate character, and there is strength in that, but sometimes, like, where she is emotionally was just awkward for me.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we've talked a bit about the extenuating circumstance. Maybe that's why, I don't know, but I as a result, I would label her awkward. Yeah. What about you?
I labeled Eloise awkward as well. I think for me, it mostly boils down to the writing style, because she does have some very awesome elements.
Mm-hmm.
Like you mentioned, I think I just, at the end of the day, wanted more understanding of who she is and why she's the way she is. I did feel like her deciding she was in love with Killian really came out of left field for me. I would have liked some more about that. So, yeah, I think mostly my rating is just about wanting a little bit more. And to be fair, and we haven't mentioned this, but this book is basically like a longish novella, right? Like it's 200 pages or something.
Yeah.
So there's that too. There's not a lot of space in such a short book to give everybody as much as what I wanted them to have.
Yeah. And it felt like you got a little snippets because it was bouncing around, but it was awkward because if you wanted to do that, then it needed more time to be developed.
I think so, anyway. How do you rate Killian?
I think he was a character that was in a very tough spot, and he was coping as best he could, but I don't think he got the tools.
Yeah.
And so, as a result of that, he's somewhere in awkward awful for me.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I don't know if that's fair. It feels unfair. Maybe it's somewhere between awesome and awkward. I know he's struggling, and I know, but I don't know how much to attribute his struggle to his trauma, dealing with his trauma, and the fact that he's a wrath demon. So much of it just like, well, he's a demon. It's like, okay, but he's hurting, and I don't know.
He doesn't really want to be wrathy either, is the thing.
No. I feel, I don't know, I'm confused on him. I'll admit that.
Okay.
So, I don't know. I don't want to assign his behaviors as, like, an overall character quality of being good or bad or whatever. Because clearly the behaviors are, at least some of the ones that I find problematic, are definitely more attributable to the trauma coping and the anxiety and everything.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Yeah, maybe more, like, awkward, maybe awesome. I don't know. Yeah, awkward, I guess.
Just a straight awkward? Straight up awkward?
I don't know. I don't feel like awkward's right either. I wish his journey would have been getting the tools and feeling better, which I don't feel like happened. You know, I mean, yes, we have the compassionate understanding from Eloise, and then that's what it. Love fixed him.
Well, yeah, she took his effluvium.
You know, I feel like maybe that's not, I don't know, that's not sufficient to me. Maybe that's more a my head thing than it is a problem with the writing of the story. What about you?
So for me, I mostly just feel bad for Killian.
Yeah.
I also struggle with rating him at all because he's just a hot mess. Poor guy. He's going through a lot. Of all the things the author did, I think they portrayed Killian's trauma really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was... I think that was the thing I like best in the book, which isn't good. Like, I mean, I guess it's good. It's written, it's fictional, it's fine. It's okay for me to like it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It made me like Killian better, I think, because he felt like a character with more depth than the other characters in the book. I feel like we got to explore him a lot more because of that. Like I said, this was a shorter book, so a lot of the pages did deal with Killian's trauma in some way. So we do get a lot of characterization for him, and I really liked that aspect of the book. And I think the author, well, like I said, I think the author did a really good job with it. As for rating him, I agree with you that his journey as a character isn't very fulfilling because I don't feel like... Well, like you, I don't feel like he got any tools. He got a loving partner, which is helpful, but I guess he recognizes he has trauma now, and that's part of it. But I don't feel hopeful for him, and I would have liked to have some of that, at least, at the end. Like, oh, good, he's definitely on his way to figuring it out. And so I'm going to rate him awkward, because I didn't really... feel like his journey was as realized as it could have been.
Hmm.
If that makes sense.
It does.
How did you rate the antagonists / villains?
My villains list is pretty short. It's basically Killian's family.
Yeah.
His father, his brothers. They're all terrible. All effective. They're all creepy. Appropriately creepy in their own way. I labeled them in my notes as the creepy shitheads.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah, they were. Especially that, whichever, I'm getting them confused in my head. The Evers one. Ugh.
Yeah, he was truly scary at times.
Yeah, I found him deeply upsetting, but effective because baddie. Oh, and I would also, not so much antagonist, but like a shout out. I did genuinely like how what was attempting to be created was a, like, you can't trust your senses environment.
Oh, yeah.
Which is antagonistic in a way. And I did really like that concept. I liked a lot of the concepts.
Yeah.
What about you?
So, yeah, my list is also Killian's family, and I agree with you. I feel like they were super duper effective in their own unique ways, and I appreciated that they were unique as well. It wasn't like they were all one brand of evil demon. They were each their own special brand of evil demon. And Clevers was honestly one of the better characters in the book because he was also pretty well rounded out. You kind of have a pretty good understanding of who he is and why he is that way, and it's scary.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Like you said, he is deeply upsetting at times. Yeah, Kildear, he was effective, but I have less of a hold on who he is as a character. The dad is off the page because he's dead at this point, but we get a lot of descriptions of the horrible things he did to Killian, and yeah, he's a horrible person. Yeah, so they were all effective, and I agree with your shout out. I liked the town that was illusion, and you had to figure out what things actually were. You couldn't quite trust it. And the bunnies that ended up being evil bunnies. I liked that.
Yes, me too.
How did you rate the book?
There were a lot of things I liked about the book. A lot of the concepts. But I must admit that for multiple reasons, some of which are of my own making, the read was awkward. So I gave it a 2.5. What about you?
I rated it a 2 because of the writing style. I really struggled with it.
That's fair.
But I did like a lot of the concepts and some of the stuff, like how Killian's trauma was portrayed, how Killever's insanity was portrayed.
Well.
Water.
Did you feel romanced?
Not really. No.
Yeah.
I do want to shout out, though, that I like that the sex scenes, all of them had growth between the couple.
Hmm.
I wish they communicated at other times as well, but I do like that none of the scenes really seemed gratuitous to me.
Hey, it's something to like. Yay.
Did you feel romanced?
No. That is par for the course. That's perfectly normal for me. Yeah,
that's less disappointing from you, honestly.
Yay! Hey, you find your yays when you can get them.
Sorry. Happy Easter to those who celebrate. We tried.
We did the thing. We tried. What more can you expect?
What else have you been reading, Em?
So, Yes, Please by Amy Poehler. It's her autobiography. It was very good. It was very entertaining. Actually, when I read it, I actually did the thing where I actually read the book.
Oh, hey.
But now that I see that there is an audio version, I think I might have to check that out. Because apparently it has Carol Burnett on it. And I find that intriguing. And Patrick Stewart. Assuming that that's the Patrick Stewart I think they are. She talks about, like, her start in Boston, her time at Upright Citizens Brigade, you know, her time in New York. Suffice it to say, I truly did enjoy it. And who doesn't like some Amy Poehler? She's excellent.
She is. I like Amy Poehler.
Yeah, you might like it. You should have a listen.
We'll see.
Well, Erica, what have you been reading?
I recently finished Welcome Home by Maggie Fern, a.k.a. Callie Moss. Apparently, she writes under a couple names.
Mm.
This is a paranormal, dark, horror romance. It is also a pretty short book, around 200 pages or so. I was drawn in by the fact that it is a horror romance. And also the cover is red and has a monochromatic, like, it's like a black and white picture, only it's red and black, I guess.
Oh, okay.
How did you say that? Anyway, it has a dude on the cover. He's definitely hot looking. He's got the chiseled jaw and everything, and he's holding a finger up like he's saying shh. But the eyeballs are like, I don't know, they look like maybe they're scribbled out in white, or like maybe like sparkly, too bright for the camera to pick up properly or something. I don't know.
Huh.
I prefer the scribbled out interpretation, or maybe like spray painted over. I don't know. I found the cover really cool, and I'm like, okay, cool. I want to read this book, and I don't want to tell you too much about it because you kind of just need to read it. Of course, check out the content warnings. It's a dark romance. Protect your mental health, all that. But This book is about a woman who is living in this beautiful suburban neighborhood, and she has this perfect life, perfect marriage, perfect husband, perfect house, perfect everything, except she hates her husband and he's horrible, and he is really, really horrible. And all of a sudden he goes missing, and she's really happy about it. She's totally fine that he's gone. Darn. She's a suspect, but that's fine. She's okay with him being gone. Her life is now peaceful. But then about 6 months go by and he shows up again. Only it's not really him. And she has to deal with that. But it's a romance, so it's fine, guys. It's all right, folks.
Cookies will get baked, right?
There's a happily ever after for the couple. Anyway.
Hey, you know what? That's the definition.
Honestly, though, so this is part of a series called the Horrors and Heartthrobs series, and they're standalones. There's only two, and I really need more. Like, more need to be written ASAP because they are so fun. I realized horror romance is a thing, and I like it.
Yay! Well, I'm glad you found a subgenre that you enjoy.
I guess it makes sense, right? Because I do basically wreck romance books, thrillers, and horror novels for the most part. So, look, they're all together in one.
Woohoo! One-stop shopping.
What's not to like? check out our website, romanceviewpodcast.com. You can see our show notes and our other episodes and lists with our upcoming reads. You can subscribe on your preferred podcast app of choice. You can rate us or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, because that would be cool. I'd love to go read those someday, maybe, if I can get over my social awkwardness.
You're a better man than I.
Yeah, and I'm not a man, so... Go me.
Better woman than I? Sorry, that's just the phrase.
I know, and I am playing off of it awkwardly.
Oh, we are gold right now.
Comedy right here. This is why you're listening, right? Listeners?
Oh, Lord. I don't want to know why they're listening.
It's for this banter right here, right?
I'm fairly certain I don't want to know. That's why I don't ask. Don't ask a question you don't want the answer to. Mm-mm. Ooh, thank you.
For this horror romance show right here.
This is the horror show. The shit show.
Hey now.
I meant me trying to like talk.
Aw, look at you.
No. No.
No, don't look at you.
If you were romanced by Eloise and Gillian's story, let us know. Or let us know if you're a peep person. Although maybe not. I wrote that, thank you everybody, and now I'm like, you know, that's kind of fucking creepy, maybe. I don't want to know. Ignorance is bliss.
Let us know if you too put your peeps in the microwave.
Do people do that?
Yeah. They get all bubbly and big.
Oh, yeah. No, clearly I do not do that.
Oh, just me. Okay.
I'm not hip. Anyway, if you want, join us next time. We discuss The Breakup Artist by Erin Clark and Laura Lovely.
Oh, you know, we've had plenty of outros at this point, but that one didn't.
It's something. So, which holiday candy is, oh my gosh, I can't breathe. Okay, I have written, which holiday has the best candy? Because that whole series, like the candy for demons, all of our holidays have candy. Yay, America.
Nowadays, I think I prefer the Christmas candy because I like getting those chocolate oranges.
Oh, yeah, those are good.
What is your opinion?
I think if I have to rate it, holiday fish on candies that I like, I think it would be Valentine's Day, Easter, Halloween, and Christmas.
What do you like from Valentine's Day?
Chocolate covered cherries.
Oh, okay.